You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another session of Meet the Press at Brookings with David Gregory. I'm Martin Indyk, the Director of the Foreign Policy Program, and we're bringing this to you together with the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at Brookings. The Director, Ken Pollock, is with us this morning on the panel as well. He's an expert on U.S. national security and military affairs and has been the Director of Persian Gulf Affairs and National Security Council. More importantly, for this morning, he is the author of A Path Out of the Desert, A Grand Strategy for America in the Middle East, which deals specifically with the kinds of challenges we're dealing with at the moment. We're also very glad to welcome to Meet the Press at Brookings Jennifer Windsor, who is the Associate Dean of Programs and Studies at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. She was previously for a decade the Executive Director of Freedom House. Anwar Bokarz is a Professor of Political Science and International Studies at McDaniel College. He is an expert on the politics of North Africa and has just completed a policy analysis paper for us, which you can find on our website, called The Perils of Incomplete Liberalization, about the challenges of politics in North Africa. And on the big screen, or the small screen, we see Shadi Hamid, who's going to join the discussion. He is the Director of Research at our Brookings Doha Center in Qatar, an Egyptian by nationality, who focuses on Islamic political parties and is a particular expert on the Muslim Brotherhood. You can read his very interesting pieces on the Brookings website as well. Sitting next to him up there is Ibrahim Shakir, who's the Deputy Director of the Brookings Doha Center. We have an audience in Doha, and we're going to bring them in as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have to tell you that revolution is in the air in Egypt and across the Middle East. I never thought in 35 years of studying the Middle East that I would in my lifetime see the events that are unfolding before our eyes at this moment. It's a time of great exhilaration for the people of the Middle East and a very scary time, not just for the authoritarian leaders there, but for those who wonder about where this vital and volatile region will head. We are indeed in uncharted waters, and so we're very grateful to David Gregory for hosting this panel discussion today. Hopefully we will come out of it with some kind of way ahead for the region and for the United States. David.
Thank you, Martin. Welcome to all of you here, to those watching on television, to our adjacent room at Brookings, and to the audience in Doha. This has got to be the most exciting conversation thus far for Meet the Press at Brookings, because we're in a breaking news situation. And for journalists like me, it just doesn't get any more exciting or more vital to have a conversation like this, to be surrounded by such expertise at a time when there's, frankly, a good deal of confusion surrounding what's happening on the ground. And that's where I want to begin, because the question of what's happening and what does it mean, I think, is all the more important given how much uncertainty. And let me stay with Martin, and then we'll have everybody touch this initially on the panel. What is happening, Martin? What do we make of this state of confusion?
Well, it's exactly right. We're not exactly sure what's happening. What we can see is Tahrir Square, Liberation Square in Cairo, which is now kind of recovering from the battles of the last 24 hours. The army seems to have moved into position between the competing camps of demonstrators calling for Mubarak to go and those who are saying it's enough and supporting him. The Prime Minister has just apologized for the actions of the thugs yesterday. But the big question is, what will the army do, and particularly what will the army do tomorrow? Friday is a time when everybody will be coming out to the mosques to pray and then coming out to the street to demonstrate. One can assume that will happen across Egypt and not just in Cairo. And now it's the big question mark is, does Mubarak have a strategy for, in fact, staying in power and overseeing a transition
to his people.
Let me pick up on that point. Shadi Hamid, who is in Doha, let me go to you on this question. The end game here for Mubarak, how do you read it? What is he doing? Is he vying for more time?
Well, he doesn't want to leave power, so he's planning on staying until September when presidential elections will be held. And this is where the big gap between the protesters and the regime is. The protesters have been very clear about what their single overarching demand is, and that is for Mubarak to step down, not in several months, but immediately. And I think actually yesterday what we saw was the official start of the counter-revolution. I think people got caught up with the euphoria of the first few days and forgot that this is an effective, strong regime. They know how to manage opposition. So what we've seen yesterday was a concerted effort on the part of the regime to regain momentum. And I think we really saw a shift in mood yesterday compared to previous days where we saw, in some cases, over a million protesters.
Ken, let me bring you into this because we want to touch all the pieces, and Shadi can talk about the Muslim Brotherhood as well and other opposition groups who have been somewhat silent here. There's El Baradei has said nobody's sitting down for conversations with the Mubarak regime until he actually leaves power. So talk a little bit about where protesters stand at this moment. I mean, they understand that if they're not in the streets, if they're not forcing the issue, they lose a lot of momentum.
Absolutely. The one thing that the protesters have going for them right now is actually the international media spotlight on them. The Mubarak regime, as Shadi has pointed out, doesn't want to leave power. They are not ready to go gently into that good night. But they are being constrained by the international media attention on them. And that's why, in many ways, it's critical that the protesters are able to keep the media with them. It's why you've seen the counter-revolutionary forces, the pro-government forces, trying to beat up journalists to try to shut down coverage of Tahrir Square, because once the media spotlight is gone, their freedom of action is going to be greatly enhanced.
Anwar, your take on this is not happening in a vacuum. This has been a broader movement up until this point. What's immediately happening regionally beyond what we're seeing in Cairo?
Sure. I mean, everybody's watching. I mean, the autocrats, I mean, from Algeria to Yemen and elsewhere are rooting for Mubarak, because this is the scenario we are witnessing or we're seeing unfold in Egypt. That's what we expected to unfold in Tunisia, but it never did. I mean, the surprise for the people and for other autocrats is how quickly that regime crumbled. I mean, when Ben Ali in Tunisia, I mean, he left and he called his counterpart in Algeria, I mean, he was stunned that he didn't duck up his heels and fought. And he said in Algeria would never do that. An Algerian president would never flee, and we never did. Remember in 1990s. I mean, this is a regime that was willing to fight and to take the country into a catastrophic civil war that cost 200,000 people. So that's what we are looking at. So the people are, as you said, as Martin said, there is really exhilaration, fascinating, from Morocco to Algeria and elsewhere what's going, and they're just looking how this thing is going to move. So that's what we are. I mean, from Morocco to where I am from, in Algeria and Mauritania, everybody's watching the reaction also of the United States.
Jennifer Windsor, let me bring you into this. Talk about a freedom movement that's around the region. The king of Jordan dissolves his cabinet. The leader of Yemen saying, he'll walk out of power later on in the year. Mubarak himself announcing that he'll be done by September, even though they're calling for him to leave now. This is quite an effect.
Well, it certainly is unprecedented. Egypt is in a region which is considered to be one of the most repressive in the world, and Freedom House's annual survey, there were and there have been some signs of small movements forward, especially, I would say, on the part of civic groups and independent media, satellite and bloggers, really trying to open things up, even in repressive countries. So I'm rooting for them. I think that this tells everybody that said that Middle East is not capable, does not really want freedom. There's obviously a constituency out there. It's too soon to tell where it's going to go. There's many, many steps. It's a long road ahead in terms of getting from protests on the streets to a democratic system in place. But they are moving now, and I think it's going to have massive implications throughout the region.
I want to talk about the U.S. response, but I want to go quickly back to Shadi, because I think one piece of this is, again, and we're talking a lot about it in this country, Shadi, is the Muslim Brotherhood. Where are they? Were they caught flat-footed? Are they poised to become a major force here? What's happening there?
Well, up until now, the Brotherhood has played a relatively limited role. They have not been very visible in the protests, but that's by design. The Brotherhood is well aware that if they have a prominent role, this will stoke the fears of the international community and particularly the U.S. So the Brotherhood is sensitive about that. They are starting to become more active, and I actually was just speaking to some Muslim Brotherhood figures over the phone today to get a better sense of what their strategy is. They do plan to get more involved, but again, they're trying to emphasize that they do not have any leadership aspirations, that they're lending their support behind Nobel laureate Mohamed El-Baradei as a potential leader of an interim government, or at least for now, an opposition coalition. It's interesting to note, though, that the Brotherhood has kind of moved and tried to make some public statements to allay some fears. So there have been several leaders who have said they will abide by the peace treaty. There was one who said that just the other day, and another who said we will affirm all past international treaties. Now, again, we don't know. The argument can be made, how genuine are the Brotherhood leaders when they say this? But I think it is interesting that they have gone out of their way to make that point to the international media.
Let me bring you in on this one narrow point of Mohamed El-Baradei, former head of the IAEA, Nobel laureate. Is he Lech Walesa here or not?
Yeah, this is going to be one of the great questions. You know, revolutions are inherently unstable and unpredictable situations. Mohamed El-Baradei might be the leader that Egypt needs to transition to democracy. But, you know, there are a lot of historical examples that ought to make us very cautious. Alexander Kerensky, Mehdi Bazargan, there have been lots of kind of good, moderate liberals who were inserted into a revolutionary situation who were swept away. And one of the things we ought to think about when we think about both the Brotherhood and the situation of the opposition today is the Muslim Brotherhood, they're the Mensheviks of the Egyptian revolution. The Bolsheviks of the Egyptian Revolution are sitting in caves in Pakistan. And I think that Ayman al-Zawahiri and Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which is a critical element of al-Qaeda, are probably right now, if they haven't already done so, thinking, this is our moment. This is the revolution we have been trying to create for 30 years in Egypt. And my guess is that, like Lenin through that sealed train through Germany in World War I, they are trying as hard as they can to get their people back to Egypt to stir up the situation, to seize this revolution from the moderates.
Zawahiri himself from exactly. Egypt, and was part of the Brotherhood himself, the founding kind of intellectual father of al-Qaeda. Indeed, Egyptian.
The Baradei and the liberals, they have to not only deal with Mubarak, they also have to deal with the extremists.